Welcome everyone to the Dallas Hoops Fancast, a podcast for Mavs fans. I'm your host, Sydney. I'm here with my co-host, Martin.
Hey guys.
Before we get started, remember you can listen to the show on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, pretty much everywhere. Just search Dallas Hoops Fancast and it'll show up. Also follow the show on Twitter at Dallas Hoops Cast. Send us your thoughts if there's something you want us to talk about. If you download the Anchor app, anchor.fm, on Google or Apple, you can send us a recorded message. So listen anywhere. Let us know what you think. Thank you guys so much for listening and for all of your support. So I'm going to be honest with you. So we were actually going to record this episode Saturday afternoon before the game Mavs versus Cavs. And then you were like, no, we should wait until after the game in case Luka drops 40 or something.
Which he almost did.
And I said, yeah. Okay, but in my head, I'm like, that's unlikely, but whatever. And then it turns out he actually ends up scoring almost 40 points. He scored 35 points. He was on a triple-double watch. Yeah, 28 in the first half, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, 1 steal. So he actually almost had a triple-double, but he had 35 points. And the Mavs got a win against the Cavaliers, which when you think about it, I mean, the Cavaliers are what, like the worst team in the league, but it's still a good win. I mean, they're without two starters still. The rest of the guys haven't joined the team yet.
Well, and the way the Mavs have played on the road this year, any road win
is
a big win. This is the best win of the season for the Mavs.
Yeah, so it was a pretty fun game to watch, mostly the first half, because Luka kind of struggled in the second half.
Yeah, yeah.
But there were a ton of fans from Slovenia. I assume a lot of them were from Slovenia. I didn't know this. Cleveland actually has the largest Slovenian population of any city in the U.S., which is so random.
Yeah, I know, of all cities.
Yeah. But anyway, so there was a ton of people there and he, you know, probably wanted to put on a show for them. And then also this is his first game playing after being snubbed from the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. So there's also that. I think it was probably both things. And we talked in the last episode about how he should have made the game. So like, we don't have to go into that too much. You can just listen to that episode, but this was definitely like he should have been an All-Star.
Well, now I feel like we should give it to Rudy just because he got so emotional about it and I feel bad for him. It's like, just want to give him a consolation
prize. When you look at the numbers, he should have also been an All-Star.
Yeah, well, and they brought out the advanced stats on defense. He's number one in the league in like every category. So yeah, he probably should have made it, but you know, it's always about points per game.
Well, and the thing about All-Star snubs, and I say this every year, it's like, okay, yes, maybe that guy should have made it, but who do you take out?
Yeah.
And that's, when you put it like that, it's harder to say, like, yeah, he should have made it.
Well, because it's East-West.
Yeah.
If they change it, which we both think they do, and a lot of people think that they should change it to where it's just best players and doesn't have a conference thing, especially since it's not East for West in the game, because, you know, D'Angelo Russell wouldn't be making the All-Star game.
Exactly.
Kyle Lowry wouldn't have made it. Chris Middleton wouldn't have made it. Rudy probably would have fell in there. Tobias Harris, Luka, because all those guys were, excuse me, all those guys were better than any of the reserves really in the East. So if they change it, then he'd probably be an All-Star this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, that point, how since the game is no longer East versus West, mm-hmm. Why is the voting? Like, there's really,
I just don't
there's
think
no reason.
Yeah, I don't think they've thought about it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's almost like they just didn't think about that. And then, because I never thought about it. And then when I heard it, I was like, oh, yeah.
I bet you it'll be changed next year. Adam Silver likes to do things that make sense.
People say he's a players commissioner.
Yeah.
So he kind of like having Dwayne Wade and Dirk in the All-Star game, that kind of stuff, to where he does things for the players.
Yep.
Anyways, so great performance by Luka. They got a win. It was also cool to see Brunson play well. He had 15 points, and then Ryan Brokoff got on fire. I mean, 12 points, but he hit three after three.
Well, his three-point shooting, he's got such a quick, beautiful release. I don't understand why he's not able to get minutes regularly. I know defense, this, defense, that, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you can hide him a lot just like you would anybody else. And besides, I didn't see anything in the games that he's played where he's a liability on defense. But his three-point shooting is so lethal that he should be on, especially in today's league where three-point shooting is such a premium. And we're out there with guys that are shooting in the low 30s in three-points or mid-30s when he can shoot 50% from three.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to put him out there when Dwight Powell is such a good three-point shooter.
Oh yeah, well, you know, when he got Dwight Powell, then I understand.
But I will say, Brokoff on defense, he looks like hesitant or scared. He's in a stance, and you can tell he's focused. But there's also a part of him where every muscle it like kind of wants to pull back because he's not sure what to do.
Well, that's probably. I mean, if that's the case, then he's probably overcompensating because he's been told, hey, the reason you're not playing is because defense. But I think he's definitely, anytime he's been given an opportunity, I feel like he has played well and has earned more minutes. But, you know, Carlisle's so weird with his rotations and his minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a good game. It was fun to watch. It was fun to watch Luka, his revenge game.
Yeah, it was a good week for Luka. I mean, he had the Toronto game, although they lost. He had that 35-point triple-double. He had the New York, first game in New York, and then again another 35-point game.
And he was named to the – he was a Western Conference Rookie of the Month for again, – this is yeah, like the third straight
year in
month.
A row, yeah.
Third month in a row. I think him Rookie of the Year – him getting Rookie of the Year is pretty much a lock at this point. And it's like I'm not – people don't say that because they think the other rookies are garbage. It's not a disrespectful thing. Yeah, it's just – Luka is far and away better. You can't really argue that. Some might be closer than other people give them credit for, but they're not better.
Yeah, and you know, I know people say, well, the Mavs still aren't very good. They're a heck of a lot better than they were last year. I mean, they've matched their win total tonight
now, yeah.
than they did all of last season, and we haven't even hit the All-Star break. And then look at the record of the Hawks and the Suns. I mean, Trae Young is having a good year. And
he's gotten better.
Yeah. And DeAndre Ayton is having a really good year. But, you know, the Suns and the Hawks, just those guys haven't contributed to wins as much as Luka has.
Yeah, I think the Mavs are still not a good team, and I don't think they'll make the playoffs. But, like you said, it's February, 2nd or 3rd?
Yeah.
And they have 24 wins. Last year, the entire season, they had 24 wins. Yep. So that's a huge improvement. Now, we don't know what they'll finish the season with, but still, he's made the team better. And also, he's a rookie. I mean, you don't have to be like, last year we're a lottery team, and this year we're going to the finals. Well, like, he's just making them better, and he's 19 years old.
And people will say, well, Donovan Mitchell did that. Donovan Mitchell was a mid-first-round pick. You know, when you're drafting that high, your team sucks.
Yeah.
Like, if you're drafting top five, your team is garbage. The Jazz had the middle of the round pick, so they were already a decent team. They barely missed the playoffs. And yeah, then they draft Donovan Mitchell, and he helps them get to the playoffs. But that doesn't make him a better player than the rookies we have in this class. You know, when you're drafted that high, it's just LeBron's team didn't make the playoffs. Jordan, the Bulls did, and he averaged 28 points a game.
Most lottery teams don't make the playoffs for a couple of years, really. Because like you said, if you're that bad, then you've got a sucky team. So I wish they were better than what they are right now, but they're better than they were last year, and that's the goal. You want to get better every year.
Really, it doesn't matter because next year with Porzingis and Luka, they're going to be in the finals, and they're going to be beating whoever from the East.
I don't know if they're going to be in the finals, but I do want to... So, like, at this point, the trade has been, like, talked out. You know, we know what the Mavs got, the players and all that, but... Just as a fan, I want to take like a deep dive into all of these players to see what they bring, how they could be used, you know, what their strengths and weaknesses are. And the Mavs actually posted an article on their website that has a really good breakdown of every player. And then we've watched some film of these players to see what their, you know, what their strengths are. I want to start with Tim Hardaway just because, like, we know what Porzingis does. We'll get to him after Tim Hardaway, but I just, you know, that's less of a surprise, or there's, you know, there's less of a mystery there. With Tim Hardaway Jr., there might be a lot of Mavs fans who don't really know what he does or what he's going to bring. So I want to start with him. So one thing that stood out to me about Hardaway was his use in the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. I think I read that. Yeah. So the pick and roll accounts for nearly 30% of his offensive possessions, which is a pretty high number. And as this article brings out, he's been incredible at scoring in those situations, ranking 9th in scoring efficiency out of 51 players who have used at least 200 possessions as a pick and roll ball handler. So he's 9th in the league, points per possession as a pick and roll ball handler, 1.004. So about 1 point per possession where he's the ball handler off a pick and roll. And I think that is significant because the Mavs use pick and roll a lot.
It's their primary.
Yeah. You know. And not only do they use it a lot, when they have a player that is extremely efficient in the pick and roll, then that really shines. Like, they do it anyway, but if you can use it well, then it kind of becomes more prominent. And we see this with Barea. We saw it with Ellis. Like, they've always used that. But with those guys, because they were so good, it was just like pick and roll after pick and roll. And it was so effective. And so, I mean, I don't think he's like that level. But since that is a part of their offense, I think that's significant.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising to me. I wasn't really that excited when Hardaway was part of the deal. Obviously, the main thing was Porzingis. So Tim Hardaway was just kind of a throw-in. But after looking at a little bit more of his advanced stats, like in this one here on the pick and roll, I'm a little more encouraged. And one of the things I think about is the Mavs have mastered the pick and roll. Who's he running pick and rolls with in New York? So, you know, for him to be that efficient with nobody rolling, nobody really good rolling, I think he'll be even better with the Mavericks, because Carlisle always has a way of just creating space with their pick and roll, either with a lob pass to our favorite player ever, Dwight Powell. Just kidding, we can't stand Powell. Maxi, DeAndre. But, you know, Rick Carlisle has a way of opening up the offense with a pick and roll. And if he's good in the pick and roll offense, then it's really going to help the Mavericks offense, because they already have one that's phenomenal in Luka. And now he can be the secondary playmaker that the Mavericks have been looking for. Now, is he the permanent option? We don't know. We'll have to see how the season goes. But there's some promise there that he might be a decent enough secondary ball handler that it might actually help out the Mavericks a lot more than we were really thinking he would.
Yeah, and I think the key there is that he can make plays. So yep. I'm not saying he's going to be, well, this year he might be their second best player, but the fact is Carlisle is going to make him a playmaker just like he did with Matthews. Mm-hmm. The difference is that
he's pretty efficient.
Hardaway can actually score and make plays. And so this article goes on to say that the reason why he's so efficient in the pick and roll is because he's because of his ability to pull up off the dribble. So this season, Hardaway has scored more efficiently on off the bounce jumpers than James Harden, Devin Booker, and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, and that one surprised me, because that's elite level jump shooters right there off the dribble. Now, you're talking about James Harden. He's the master of dribble, 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 pull up, and he shoots it, you know, better than him. Now, obviously not as many times, but he's still efficient. So yeah, that surprised me as well. I thought he was just a catch and shoot guy, but he actually can make some plays.
Yeah. So again, I think, you know, just using the pick and roll, that's going to be super effective for them. And I mentioned how they use, when I watch him in New York, He looks a lot like Wesley Matthews for the Mavs. I don't mean that in like that he sucks. I mean the way that they use him, the plays that they run for him, how he's using those plays. It's a lot like with Matthews, whether it's with a pick or him coming off a screen and then driving it down the middle. It's a lot of the same stuff, except with him, he can actually do those things. He always plays very under control. He's methodical. He knows what he's good at. He doesn't try to do too much. Sometimes he brings the ball down so he can initiate the offense. Yeah. So
but he's definitely an upgrade over Matthews.
Yeah, yeah. And I think so, that's the basic of it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a pretty sizable upgrade over Wes Matthews, especially because Matthews' defense really hasn't been the same since he was in Portland and Utah. So yeah, he's a nice upgrade there. And it should take some pressure off of Luka as well from having to create something out of nothing every single time down the court. So yeah, that definitely surprised me with him. I'm looking forward to seeing how that will translate with the Mavericks.
Yeah, and like just to be clear, I don't think so. Right now, you know, with New York, he averaged 19 points. I don't think he's going to do that. Like all of this good stuff that I'm saying is basically my opinion of him is that he can be a solid role player for the Mavs.
Yeah.
On you know, once they get everybody back and they're operating at peak performance next year, I think he should be probably their third or fourth best player, which is good enough for me. I said this last episode, you take his shots down a bit, you know, get the defense to spread out. I see him averaging like 13 to 15 points, but on a better shooting percentage. Right now he's shooting less than 39%.
Yeah, I thought it was right at 39.
It's 38.8.
Yeah. Well, really, he's not that far away from Harrison's numbers. I mean, really, Harrison Barnes is at 40%. Now, he's at 39 from three, so he's shooting a lot better from three percentage points. But he's not that far away from what Harrison Barnes is doing for the Mavericks.
He's shooting almost 35% from the three-point line.
Yeah, I think his three-point percentage, in order for him to really be effective on a winning team, he's got to get that up close to 40% because, you know, the efficiency has to be there. The teams have to fear when you're shooting it. And I don't know if they do that right now with Tim Hardaway.
When he gets on fire, yeah.
Oh, yes.
When he gets on fire, he's pretty awesome to watch. But that rarely happens.
And that's another aspect because with Wes Matthews, when he's on fire, he's coming off screens. He's catching the ball and shooting it. He's never a dribbler, a ball handler in those cases. But Tim Hardaway has the ability. And another thing, Wes Matthews doesn't have the ability to win a game for you. The most points he's going to get is in the 20s. And that's when he is just flat out on
fire.
And
also situationally,
he
doesn't do those things.
But Tim Hardaway can go off for 30, 35, 37 points. Now, he's not going to do it regularly, but every now and then he can. He can help win a game for you. And sometimes that's all you need in the playoffs is somebody, a different guy to help win a game for you on any given night. And Tim Hardaway might be one of those guys.
Yeah. So I think he could be good for them. I think having him on a team where he's not the number one player, we talked about this before we were recording. So again, going back to his similarities with Wesley Matthews, imagine if Wesley Matthews was your number one player.
Yeah.
It'd probably be similar. He'd probably average 19 points on 38% shooting. So you take that guy and make him your fourth best player, except it's Hardaway, so he has more skill in terms of ball handling, playmaking, shooting, etc. And I see him being, like we said, an upgrade over Matthews. And as your third or fourth best player, that's a solid role player for a playoff team.
Yeah, and it says here also that of the 83 players who take at least 200, who have taken at least 200 spot up jumpers, he ranks 19th. In scoring efficiency. What I don't understand, if his efficiency is so high, why are his shooting percentages so low? Like, where are these points coming from?
Well, his spot-up shooting numbers haven't been great this season.
Well, he said he's 19th in scoring efficiency out of 83 players who have taken at least 200 spot-up jumpers. So he's actually pretty respectable there.
And
so
he must be doing other things that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he can't finish at the rim and he's asked to do that. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what his weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. And Carlisle will definitely bring those out at first to make sure he never does them again.
Yeah, and you know, another interesting thing to think about is the the players and really the point guards that Hardaway has played with. Because,
yes, yeah,
you know, I said sometimes he brings the ball down. He is a playmaker. And probably because, you know, they don't have anybody. Like, the starting point guards that he's played with are Raymond Felton, Jose Calderon, Shane Larkin, Jeff Teague, Dennis Schroeder, Jarrett Jagg, and Emmanuel Mudiay. Yeah.
I mean, the best one, obviously, is Dennis Schroeder, but Schroeder is like a score-first point guard. He's not a guy that's looking to create a shot for another teammate. No disrespect to him, but that's just not his game. And none of those guys on there are really capable of finding him in open spots, really, where he's comfortable. And I think that's where Luka can do that on a regular basis, is get the ball to him on time, on target, and in spots that he likes. And he's probably playing a role with New York that he's not really suited for, kind of like having Wes Matthews with the Mavericks, where he's the primary guy. If he is the second or third or fourth option, I wonder if he will flourish a little bit better than he did in New York.
Yeah, I think playing with Luka will help. Having Porzingis. Now, he's played with Porzingis last year.
And he averaged 17 a game.
Yeah, so last year he averaged 17.5 points on 42% shooting. Yeah. So not much better, but New York still didn't have anyone. And, and also, he's playing then when Porzingis is out, I think. Yeah. I have to look at the games. But
42%, and what's his three-point percentage from last year?
Last year it was almost 32, so not very
good. So not very good, yeah.
For his career, he's shooting 42%, 34% from the three-point line. But he's had some seasons in there where he's shot 39% and then some seasons where he shot 45%. So he's played for the Knicks and the Hawks.
Yeah.
Neither one of those are good teams. So it's hard to really know how good is he really, how efficient is he really. He's never been on a team with other players that can either draw out the defense or get him the ball in favorable spots.
Yeah, and he's just a player the Mavericks haven't really had in a long time. A guy that can really get his own shot consistently. I mean, outside of Luka, you know, the Mavericks really haven't had that in forever. You know, Dirk back in his prime. I guess Monte was probably one of those guys. But, you know, Monte didn't really have high shooting percentages either. And he was able to flourish in the Mavericks system because he was patient, and Carlisle was really good with the pick and roll. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I was not really that excited about Tim Hardaway Jr., but after looking a little bit more at the advanced stats, I'm kind of excited to see how he'll play with Luka and how Carlisle will draw out some of the things that he's really good at and do those more consistently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd say I'm excited, but I don't see him as a throw-in the way I did before.
Yeah.
I think, like, okay, this guy, he actually fits in well, and I think he could be good for
him. I mean, he's an upgrade over Wes Matthews, and, you know, that's
all
better.
There is
that's really all you need.
Yeah, so that's Hardaway. Porzingis, we can talk about him since obviously he's the headliner here. I do want to, so somebody tweeted us on Twitter, obviously, a Reddit thread for, like, kind of soliciting information from Latvian NBA, or just people that know Porzingis from before he was in the NBA. And there were questions about, like, injury history. Is he prone to injury? What's his character like? Because now you're hearing all this stuff that New York is saying is how he's selfish and all that. So, like, you know, we have only seen him for a couple years. What's he really like? You guys have been watching him. And regarding the injuries, most of the people here that responded said that he's not injury prone. Like, he's a big guy, and the way he plays, he's had, like, some ankle problems or maybe some foot problems, but nothing. He's not injury prone. And even the ACL, it was kind of a freak injury. It's not something like, you know, where Derrick Rose or Chandler Parsons, where this stuff just happened.
Brandon
you're not
Roy.
Even doing anything. Yeah. With him, it was like, you could see, like, okay, that would have happened to anybody. So I thought that was comforting. One thing that a couple of people brought up when asked about his character, they brought up his brothers. Mm-hmm. So apparently he has two brothers that are really involved in his career and business decisions.
Well, one of his brothers is
his agent.
His agent, I think.
And there was kind of conflicting ideas about them. Some people said that they're both jerks and they're like living vicariously through Porzingis, and they, you know, they don't care about anything. They just want him to make money so that they get money, that kind of stuff. And then there were other people that said, like, they're his brothers. They just want what's best for him. Yeah. Like, they don't really care about what team he's on. They just want him to win.
Yeah.
And, like, I get that. It does kind of concern me, like, winning is the number one thing. Not that, I mean, it should be, but I worry, like, what's that going to make them think in, you know, if some kind of situation comes up?
I mean, ultimately, the player's success is going to bring them money. So they would want him to go where he's going to be most successful, both individually and as a team. You know, if he comes to Dallas and they're really good and he's really good and he qualifies for the max, or he gets the max, I mean, what more do you want? I mean, he's on a good team, he's successful, and he's got the money. So to say that the money is their only concern, well, that wouldn't make any sense, because you would want him to be successful, because when he's successful,
you make money.
Then he's going to make money. So their main goal should be for him to be where he's going to be the most successful. And they just didn't feel like, or the rumor is that, you know, he didn't feel like it was going to be in New York.
So one guy about the brothers, he said KP's head got way too big way too early, which I don't know.
Said
I don't know.
Every superstar ever.
He didn't come around Knicks practices. He didn't want to rehab with the Knicks team doctors. His brothers wanted to handle everything as if he weren't even a part of the Knicks team. When they hired the coach, he flew to Latvia to talk to Porzingis and to develop a relationship. But I guess that didn't really work out. So, and that was true. He didn't rehab with the Knicks. He went to Real Madrid, of all places, which is where Luka was. So there's kind of that stuff that you could see it as like, oh, they're jerks and they don't care about anyone but themselves. Or you could see it as like, they don't care about anyone except for themselves and their family and taking care of Porzingis.
But that's the league nowadays. I mean, isn't this what Anthony Davis did, what LeBron's been doing?
True.
You know, what every superstar or star is doing is what's best for them and what's best for their career. And he's doing the same thing. Now, I would question it if it were a different organization, like the Spurs, like what Kawhi did to the Spurs. It was very hard to take sides with Kawhi Leonard, knowing the organization that he was having complaints about, you know, or complaints about. It's the San Antonio Spurs. They're the, you know, everybody looks up to them for building the best franchise. But it's the Knicks, and they have had a terrible history with winning, with players, with ownership, management. There's been a lot of players that
nobody wants to play for.
Exactly. And there's been a lot of players that have conflicted with the Knicks management. I mean, Phil Jackson, I mean, for crying out loud, he nearly destroyed that team. And so, yeah, like, you know, he didn't get along well with New York management. That's basically every player. I mean, Enes Kanter's having the same problem.
Yeah.
You know, and none of these guys, he's never considered a bad character guy. So yeah, I mean, you only know until you have him and he's in your locker room. The good thing is the Mavericks have Luka, and Luka's the man. And if Luka is not giving the franchise a hard time, Porzingis can't, you know. And if Porzingis comes in and he has a problem, he has a bad attitude, see ya. We have Luka, you know. They'll trade him in a heartbeat.
I do, since the Mavs have Donnie Nelson, who is like, Donnie Nelson is not just in tune with European basketball. Like, he's
the godfather, really.
Yeah, he knows the people. Mm-hmm. He's in with all of those crowds. And so I trust his knowledge of Porzingis as a person.
Yeah.
Because I think that he's probably been around him a lot, or knows people that have been around him. So that's one thing that, if it were any other team, I would kind of be worried. But just because Donnie Nelson is so close with that world, I trust that they got him knowing that either he's a good guy, or maybe they're just not too worried. It's not as bad as everyone says.
Well, in having star players, a lot of times it is high maintenance.
Yeah, not everyone is like Dirk.
Yeah, exactly. None of them are like Dirk. They're all, look at LeBron. I mean, he goes to New York, and now, you know,
LA.
or yeah, New York. He goes to LA, and now the New Orleans Pelicans are being destroyed all because he says he wants one guy. You know, so having star players, it is high maintenance, and that's just part of it. And this whole attitude thing, I mean, the way the NBA is nowadays, players are going to do what's best for their future. And I don't blame him for wanting out of New York. What have they done over the last 20 years that makes you think that he's going to have a successful career there? So why wouldn't he want out? So how is that having a bad attitude? Now, I'm not saying he doesn't. He might. But I would rather see for myself and not hear some reports, especially a lot of these reports are coming from the Knicks organization. They got to sell the fact that they traded.
Or the fans who are just upset.
Yeah, exactly. Or they had to justify their own, you know, feelings about the trade.
Yeah, every time a player gets traded, the fans from the original team are always like, he's, you know what, he wasn't even that good anyways.
In this case, Wes Matthews really did suck.
We thought that the whole time.
Yes, and Dennis Smith as well. I thought he sucked as well.
And now Jordan, I will say, and I've said this, you know, earlier, that I agree Jordan's defense was not good. Effort wasn't always there. But the fact is, he grabbed a lot of rebounds. And I think
because
the
he wouldn't let anybody else grab a rebound. Like, he nearly broke Luka's back. He almost broke Luka's back early in the season because he wouldn't let him grab a rebound. So, you know, tonight, I don't know. I didn't look at the rebounding numbers. Now, again, it was Cleveland, so that's not really a good indication. But I felt like it was just fine.
Rebounding was Mavs had 50 and Cleveland had 44.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it's Cleveland.
But. Yeah, it's Cleveland. The shooting percentages also play a role. Like, usually that team that wins...
Out-rebounds.
Yes, and it's not because they're better rebounders. It's because they made more shots.
There's
so,
fewer rebounds.
You know, the rebounding only becomes a problem when the other team is getting a lot of offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
If they're not getting offensive rebounds, who cares who's winning the rebounding battle?
So Cleveland grabbed 11 offensive rebounds, and the Mavs got 9. So again,
they didn't get killed by the offensive rebounds. So, you know... The whole DeAndre being a huge... Now, he is a big rebound guy, but he also is a rebound hoarder and just stole every single rebound. So I'm curious to see how Barnes' rebounding numbers go up because at 4, it's pretty pathetic.
But last year, he was at like 6 or 7.
Yes, so hopefully he'll get that back up. And I'm curious to see how Kleba does. Kleba did a really good job of boxing out. Now, he didn't necessarily get the rebound, but the Mavericks got it as a team because of his boxing out. And that's really all that matters.
Yeah, Kleba tonight had 9 rebounds.
Yeah.
For the record, Hardaway is averaging 3.5 rebounds this year. Which, I mean, for a guard,
I mean, that's basically what Matthews was averaging.
That's what Barnes is averaging.
That's sad for a 6'8 forward.
One thing that people did say about Porzingis is that he's a really hard worker, which makes sense because he's good.
Yeah.
You know, a player doesn't get to be at that level without... consistent hard work. I don't mean like one summer after college, but like, you know, he's a career basketball guy. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. He works hard.
Well, I think about like this whole bad attitude thing. And again, every star in the league, he's like a wide receiver. Every wide
they're
receiver.
They're all drama queens.
Yeah. They're always open.
Yeah.
And the guy that I think about is Kevin Durant. Mm. I mean, talk about an emotional train wreck. I feel like he goes to bed crying every night because people don't like him. Yet he's so good that the Warriors don't care. They put up with it, you know. And DeMarcus Cousins will probably be the same way. He's going to, you know, DeMarcus Cousins always has that crybaby face going on. You know, every time he gets the ball and he feels like he gets fouled, he looks like a crybaby. I don't think the Warriors are going to care because of what he does on the court, and they're winning. So the same thing with Porzingis. Even if he does have a bad attitude, if he goes out there and drops 30-10 and you're 58-24 to finish the season, who cares?
I think it's like there's a level where it becomes a problem. Like, you know, when you start bringing a gun to the locker room. Well,
like Gilbert Arenas.
Like, there's some players that are just so bad. You know, we could probably think of stories where, or that the crybaby for the Mavs, who was that?
Antoine Walker.
Dirk said, I've never seen a guy cry so much.
Like the biggest, like, and Dirk doesn't say bad things about his teammates.
So there's a level where it becomes a problem. But I think you just expect it. Like, some guys might be... you know, they might have a certain attitude or maybe be a little cocky because they're the best in the world, but that doesn't make it a problem. You have to just manage
when
that.
You're winning, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, look at the Warriors. I mean, Draymond wants to kill Durant, and I'm sure Durant wants to kill Draymond, but when you're winning, it just doesn't matter. So if the Mavericks are winning, no one's going to really care about, you know, what they're doing off the court.
Yeah. So let's talk about some numbers with Porzingis. He's the tallest player in the NBA, which is interesting. He's 7'3".
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah.
He shot 39.5% from beyond the arc the last season. For his career, he's shooting 36% on threes. Fewer than 30% of his total shots came from deep, which is interesting. He's used more as a postman or in the mid-range or on the block, which I think is important. And this is one thing that we said, you know, after watching him, like, he does remind us of a young Dirk. And we're not just saying that because he's really tall and he shoots. Like, every 7-footer that shoots threes, he's like the next Dirk. But this guy, Porzingis, actually does look like a young Dirk. But we were saying, so he's a really good shooter, but it'd be good to work with Dirk to really develop a dominant, unstoppable post game. Because that's what took Dirk to the next level.
Or just a go-to move.
Yeah.
Yeah, he needs to develop. Because in the playoffs, when it... I mean, you got to have a guy, because the defenses are so good in the playoffs. Yeah. And the player or the teams that advance is because no matter how good that defense is, they're able to put that ball in the hoop. And that requires players that can score no matter how good the defense is. And that's why Dirk won the championship 2011. Because they would play him so well, but he could fade away one leg. There was just nothing you could do about it on, as a defense. Porzingis needs to be able to develop something like that in order for the Mavericks to really make advances. Now, he's only 23 years old, so he's got plenty of time to do that. To work with Dirk. But yeah, developing a fadeaway or a post move, something that he has something to go to in the half court.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, you think about Curry, who shoots threes, but it's really the same thing. He is unstoppable with that three. So it's not like, it doesn't necessarily matter where it comes from. Like, it doesn't have to be in the post. He's a big man, so that makes the most sense. But yeah, he's just got to develop the move that is unstoppable no matter what the defense is. Because a lot of times in, like, grinded out playoff games, you don't, you know, get the ball at the top of the key, you know, at the three-point line, and then you drive it and do all this crazy stuff that he does. A lot of times you got to get it, pound it, and then put it in the basket no matter what.
Yeah, and I think one thing the Mavericks will have that will prove to be unstoppable is the pick and roll with Luka and Porzingis, because...
And Vucevic.
Vucevic.
If they get him.
Yeah, I mean, just Porzingis and Luka alone. I mean,
with Hardaway spotting up.
Yeah.
No, really? You know what Carlisle's gonna do? He's gonna do a pick and roll with Luka and Hardaway and have Porzingis
standing in the corner. The thing is with Porzingis, he's so good at mismatches. So if you switch, and in today's league, that's all they do is switch. So let's say, you know, you have Trevor Ariza guarding Luka, and you switch, and now Porzingis has Trevor Ariza on him. He's so good in that mismatch that he can shoot right over them that it's just deadly. You can go to that basically every single time. Now, let's say they don't switch. Well, Luka is going to eat them alive. And then it talks about his pick and pop in the pick
and
roll.
One thing about, so switching real quick before that, he last year on switches, he scored 1.017 points per possession in the post following a switch, which is on the same level as other all-stars like Aldridge, Embiid, and Anthony Davis.
Yeah. So he's up there right at the top with all of them on when he's got a smaller guy on him. And again, it's like you pick your poison with the other team, because if you put your focus on Luka, Porzingis is going to kill you. If you put your focus on Porzingis, Luka is going to kill you. I mean, Luka's already a star. He's going to be a superstar, as good as this guy is. And now it's almost going to be like a Kevin Love, LeBron type dynamic, because Kevin Love was such a good shooter and LeBron was such a good passer.
Except Porzingis is better.
Well, Porzingis is better than Kevin Love, obviously. Yeah. But the pick and pop, it says here that of the 21 players who picked, popped, and took a spot-up jumper at least 50 times, Porzingis ranked second in points per possession at 1.259, better than Karl Anthony Towns, Marc Gasol, and even
was that
Dirk.
Last year?
This was last year, I presume, since that's what the article is talking about.
Yeah, last season.
Yeah. So he's deadly in the pick and pop. Now, I'm curious to see how Carlisle does that because Carlisle loves the pick and roll.
Yeah.
But it's like, if you're so good at picking and popping, why change? And not only that, Porzingis can get up there.
Yeah,
so
true.
So he can roll as well.
I think he does the pick and roll so much because it's Dwight Powell and Powell can't do anything else.
Yeah.
But, you know, you think about it with Dirk, a lot of times they do the pick and the pick really just to get a switch and then he'll post up or it's a pop and he gets a wide open. So I think you'll see more of that with Porzingis than the way they play Powell.
Yeah. And I think we can probably do a lot of watching film of Monte and Dirk. You remember Monte and Dirk pick and roll was really unstoppable. And this was even when Dirk was at the end of his career and Monte wasn't really that great of a jump shooter. And they did pick and pop all day long. They would screen, rescreen until Monte got the opening he wanted or until the switch happened. So, you know, I think you can see a lot of that. And that team was a really good team before the Rondo trade. They were on pace to be one of the best offenses of all time, if not the best. I think they were on pace for
They had some historical blowouts.
Yeah, yeah, they had 5 30-point blowouts.
Yeah, I think they beat the Sixers by like 50 at one point.
Yeah, and they had more 30-point wins than all the other teams combined.
Yeah.
So their offense was explosive, and then they did the Rondo trade, and it all went downhill from there. But you saw a glimpse of what it might be like with Luka and Porzingis, and having Tim Hardaway, or also known as Chandler Parsons, on the wing to help offset that pick and roll. So yeah, it's going to be dangerous.
One thing too that we're not really sure of yet is if he's going to play the four or the five. Now, he's always been adamant that
he wants to play the four.
Yeah, he's a four. So I assume they'll keep him there. But then it's like, okay, if Barnes is here next year, does he play the three? Do you put Maxey at the five? There's some stuff to figure out there. I think that's why they're trying to target Vucevic. They might also target Cousins for the same reason.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't like Cousins, his attitude.
Yeah.
But what he does on the court, and if the Mavericks are winning, and the good thing about, in this case, is Cousins isn't going to come here and be the guy. He's not going to be able to come here and demand this, demand that, because the guy is Luka. Luka's the man.
True.
So he's kind of playing off, and just like what he's doing in Golden State, you know, he can't go into that general manager's office and say, hey, give me the ball more or whatever he needs to tell the coach or GM or whatever. He can't do that in Golden State because you got Steph and Durant. Likewise here, if you got Luka and Porzingis, he can't go in there and say, hey, I need to have the ball over and over. Like, see ya, we're just going to trade you. So, you know, it'd be hard to say. I mean, if you had Luka, Porzingis, and DeMarcus Cousins.
Or Vucevic, either
or
one.
Or Vucevic. It would be a pretty potent and unstoppable team.
Yeah, so a note on Porzingis' defense, because this is one thing that people have talked about. Like, I've heard some people say he's a really good defender, and I've heard some people say his defense is suspect. So just a stat on that. Opponents shot, I'm assuming this is last year, but we'll say for a season, opponents shot just 49% at the rim against Porzingis. That mark led the entire NBA among the 90 players who defended at least 3 attempts per game and played at least half the season. So like taking a reasonable sample size, he led the NBA in opponent shooting percentage at the rim. You know, and he's averaging like he was averaging like a couple blocks a game. So that's just at the rim. Like, his defense on switches or, you know, around screens. We'll have to see what that is like. But at least in that number, he's
good.
Yeah,
I've seen some highlights. Now, they were highlight films, so obviously they were good plays. But where he got stuck on a guard and the guard thought they got past him. And he still blocked it.
Because he's so long.
Exactly. He's the tallest guy. He's still mobile. He's still pretty athletic for being 7'3". So I think he can switch fine. And he is so long that his hand can kind of get in the sight of a player who decides to pull up from deep with having him on him, that it might impact the shot. But I just imagine Kleba and Porzingis out there.
Be a block party.
Yeah, we would lead the league in blocks just because both of them get so many blocks and are really good at defending the rim.
So, you know, we talked about, here's my thing with if they have Luka, Porzingis, and then insert some other center there. It's great and it's awesome, but I'm not extremely excited about it unless they have good shooters around them. And I think Hardaway fits into that. And I also think that Courtney Lee fits into that too.
Yeah, except Courtney Lee is old. Like, if you're building a new core, you want to have guys that are going to be a part of it for a long time.
Yeah, he's 33.
Yeah,
so
he's not a part of the future. The reason they got him was because of his contract.
Yeah.
And the Knicks needed to get rid of it. No disrespect to him, but now if he were joining a veteran team that needed what he had to offer, then it'd be perfect. But I see more. I don't know if Courtney Lee's going to play much, but you never know with Carlisle. He could be their starting center.
Well, this could be one thing that the Mavs do is they take old players and like rejuvenate their careers.
Yeah.
So Courtney Lee, this, again, this article from Mavs.com, Courtney Lee hasn't shot below 37% from the beyond the arc since 2010.
Yeah.
He's, I think, is a career 38, almost 39% shooter from the three-point line.
He's a respectable 3-and-D guy.
He's 6'5".
Yeah.
He's a veteran, so
I wouldn't be surprised if Carlisle ended up starting the guy. You never know. Like, you know, you never know with Carlisle, the way he's going to do it, the way the lineups are. And he is a quality role player, and he's a decent 3-and-D guy. I mean, essentially, he's a better defender than Wes Matthews, and he's a better three-point shooter than Wes Matthews, and they basically average the same amount of points.
Yeah, and
he's just a little bit better.
Yeah, and he has actual solid veteran experience.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to be in the league for a long time, but like Courtney Lee, he has 50 career playoff experiences. Mm-hmm. In 11 postseason experiences for Memphis, he averaged 13 points on 55% shooting. He's been to the finals as a rookie.
Yeah.
So it's he has like relevant, helpful veteran experience. Mm-hmm. He's a 3-and-D guy. He might end up being like a Devin Harris, that kind of thing. Or he might end up rejuvenating his career. He's only 33 and having a solid season for them.
Like I understand the wing thing is important. The wing defenders and the 3-point shooters to surround around Luka and Porzingis. But this is the very beginning. Like, in 3 years, we don't know who's going to be.
This team's going to be totally different.
Exactly. So, you know, I think in the meantime, Tim Hardaway can fit that. Maybe Courtney Lee. I honestly think Kleba is a 3-and-D guy. He's a prototypical. Now, he's not a prototypical because he's 6'11".
Yeah.
But he's an excellent on-ball defender. He's an excellent help-side defender. And he's a pretty respectable 3-point shooter. And I think they'll probably, at least for the rest of this year, he's going to be getting a lot of minutes to see if he can play that center role next to Porzingis, just in case they don't get a Vucevic. But I think that's one guy. Now, it just depends on who the center is. Because if you got Vucevic, then you can't have Vucevic, Kleba, and Porzingis out there. Be the slowest team in the league. But yeah, you don't know who they're going to have on their team in 3 years. This is just the very beginning building blocks. One thing to keep in mind is, we should look at free agents after next season when Tim Hardaway and Courtney Lee's contracts expire, because Luke is still going to be in his rookie deal. You know, so they might have money next summer if there's a wing out there that they might be able to have join the team. Since it's so early on, you know, they can make so many changes between now and then.
Do you think they'll make any more trades this year?
Yeah, well, one tweet I saw from from Mike Fisher, Dallas guy, not my favorite reporter or tweeter or whatever, but he brought out something that the Mavericks may have done tonight, which was showcase, kind of like they did with Dennis Smith with the Knicks. They may have showcased Harrison Barnes with the Cavs.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe that.
Well, he always
has these anonymous
sources. And to be fair to Fisher, sometimes he's right.
Well, and he has been around the team for like ever.
Yes. So I don't know what that means. There's really not anybody on the Cavs that interests me. The only thing I can think of is the Cavs want to unload Kevin Love because he's paid $30 million. Now, the Mavs, if you're going to do that, your team's set for at least 4 years. But you're talking about now Kevin Love at the five, Porzingis at the four. You want to talk about some of the best three-point shooters in the league. Kevin Love is one of the – and their quick release, their pick and roll, the pick and pop. Imagine – just imagine Luka with Porzingis on one side, Kevin Love on the other side doing the double screen. It would be unstoppable.
And then a guy like Tim Hardaway spotting
in the corner.
Or somebody, it can be, some other, know, elite shooter.
Yeah, you can have a fan stand in the corner to help. You know, because that that three-point shooting would be so deadly, that pick and roll. And Luka is so good at the no-look passes, the look away, finding the open guy. Now, if they're going to do that, then obviously they're not getting Vucevic. But you're talking about Kevin Love. You're also talking about two guys who have injury problems.
That's why I was thinking about Kevin Love. His defense, his injuries.
His defense is respectable. You know, like we talk, Kevin Love is a respectable defender. He's a respectable rim protector, and he's also a very good rebounder. So, and well, he played the five. He played the five with LeBron, and they won a championship with him. And remember his defense on Steph Curry in that finals game seven.
Yeah.
Steph couldn't get away from that. That's Steph Curry, and he was all over him. So his defense is respectable. Now, is he, you know, is he Rudy Gobert out there?
Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah, Hakeem Olajuwon blocking the paint or guarding the paint? No, but he's respectable. And then not only that, like what you're going to do on the other end of the court.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to prevent them from scoring 140 because that's what you're going to be dropping.
Yeah, there's been rumors of, well, first of all, Love has been on the trading block like his entire career, but there's been rumors tying the Mavs to Love. Another rumor that died down a while ago, but was Otto Porter. And that trade, I think, was centered around Barnes, which means it's technically still an option. And Otto Porter is a really good defender. He's a great three-point shooter. That could also be on the table, too.
We'll see. I mean, the thing with Barnes, I know he's got a player option, but chances are, in my opinion, he opts out. And that's only because he's 26 years old. He's averaging 18 points a game. He's going to get money. Now, is he going to get $25 million a year? No, but he's talking about, he's going to be thinking about long term. You know, so what if a team comes and offers him 4 years for $70 million? That's more than $25 million. So I can imagine, now it's not a max deal, but he's still close to that $20 million, and he's got that 4 year, he's got that longevity. And another thing, if you're the Cavs, what you could be thinking is you bring Harrison Barnes on and you just basically give him the ball. Let him average 20, 25 a game for you. You're not really trying to win. His points per game going up is a good thing for you because that increases your chances that he's going to actually opt out of his contract. So, you know, that could be happening, and I don't know if that is happening, but it's just weird that he said that. But if you are the Wizards or the Cavs and you have a guy for 4 years for $30 million, essentially both those guys are getting paid, or you can have Harrison Barnes for two, most likely just for one.
Yeah, so I like Kevin Love. I like Otto Porter. I like both of them more, knowing that they aren't like the big trade the Mavs are making.
Oh yeah, now
like,
that we got Porzingis. Yeah,
before, when it was like, we might get Otto Porter, it was like, well, why?
Or Evan Fournier.
Yeah, so, but between the two, Love and Porter, I kind of like Porter better just because he's younger. And I think...
doesn't have the injury history.
Exactly, yeah. So this year, comparing Porter to Barnes, because I think that's what the trade would be.
Mm-hmm.
So starting with their usage rate and minutes, Barnes' usage rate is at 23%. Porter is at 18. So take that into consideration when you look at his numbers. And then also, Porter's averaging 28 minutes. Barnes is averaging 32.
Really, what we should look at is like the advance, like the points per possession when they shoot.
Yeah. So like just looking at the numbers, Barnes is averaging 18 points. He's shooting below 41% and 39% from the three-point line. Porter is averaging 12.5 points. He's shooting 46% and 37.5%, still good from the three-point
line. Well, he led the league last year, I think, with 44%.
Something like that, yeah. He's also averaging 5.5 rebounds. Barnes is averaging 4. Assists are slightly up, but more steals and more blocks. He's a good defender. Mm-hmm. So I'm not, he's not a, he's just an upgrade over Barnes. And so I think I would like to have Porter to kind of help defend the wing.
Yeah. I mean, it just depends on if you can get him. Yeah. I mean, if you can get him, great.
But is that like, he's not going to, it's not going to make a huge difference.
Yeah. And the thing with that is long-term, that's so much money for a role player. So essentially your core then is going to be Porzingis, Luka, and Otto Porter.
And probably in Hardaway you could include
I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
But because Otto Porter is getting paid so much, he's a part of that contract, team.
Yeah.
I would rather take the chance
on
Kevin Love because I mean, that's an all-star. And it could be one of those classic cases where he's always injured, goes to another team, never injured again. It happens all the time. Now, that may not, but he's a proven, he's a champion, he's an all-star, he's a better player. And if you're going to get stuck, then I would rather do it with Kevin Love than Otto Porter. Anyways, do you think Barnes will be moved before the trade deadline?
So that was my original question. I honestly don't know. I keep, like, I thought they were done, but I keep hearing that maybe they're not done. Like, they still could do more things, but...
Does it make sense for them to move on from Barnes?
I mean, it's like you said, you don't know if he's going to opt in or if he's going to opt out. How much is he going to get offered this summer if he opts out? Is he really that good? I mean, he was like the fourth best player on a championship team. Like, you don't want to put too much into that. So, I don't know. Barnes for me is sort of like, you know, every championship team needs role players. Like, yeah, I like Porzingis and I want Vucevic, but you still need role players. And Barnes is a role player and he's a good one.
I don't know if I agree with that because role players have to make smart plays. He doesn't do that.
That is true.
He can't make a smart
play.
That's
true.
He's too good to come off the bench. He's not good enough to be a one-on-one guy consistently. He can't make a consistent play that's, you know, like that's not a terrible shot at the rim. He's a black hole on offense. I think he is... He served the purpose exactly for the Mavs. They needed to sell some tickets. You got to have somebody that can put the ball in the hoop while you're in your rebuild mode. To me, that's Harrison Barnes. He can put up 20 points a game, but they're empty stats because they're not really efficient. They're not really within the offense. And when he's not getting his shot, he's still shooting it. And it's break, you know, banking off the backboard
or
brick. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, and he can't swing the ball around. He can't find the open guy. Sometimes we're watching him play.
Yeah.
He drives the lane. There's three guys wide open and he shoots it over three people. So to me, he served the purpose, but he's not a winning player in my opinion. And I don't think that he fits with where the Mavericks are wanting to go, and that's players that can actually make plays.
I think if you can, I mean, if you can get Vucevic, and that means giving up Barnes, that's an easy call. Yeah, I want Vucevic. If it's between Barnes or Kevin Love or Otto Porter, I think that's a tougher call. I don't know. To me, it's like, take it.
I wouldn't take Porter at all, just because of his
contract. Yeah.
The great thing about the Maverick situation is Porzingis and Luka are so young. Mm-hmm. So you're bringing in a veteran champion who's also an all-star, who's going to be the third guy with Luka and Porzingis. And let's say he's healthy. Like, that's a really good team.
Yeah.
Now, they may not win the championship, but when his contract expires, that's 30 mil that opens up for your team. And Porzingis is 26. And Luka's 23 or however long his contract is, then you swing again. You go for somebody else. So to me, Kevin Love would be the better option.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Cavs might be willing to do it just because they suck, and it's like, yeah, sure, yeah, let's get rid of this huge contract. It's not helping us. So.
The other thing is Vucevic. You know, obviously, trading for Vucevic would be almost impossible. A dream. And yes, well, it would be almost impossible unless he comes to the Magic and he tells them, I'm not re-signing with you. I'll only play in Dallas, and force their hand. Now everybody's going to be flipping out and hating it.
I don't like when players do that.
Well, I don't either, but it's the league, and players can get traded in a heartbeat without them being asked. I mean,
he's a free agent this summer.
Well, exactly.
So if Barnes opts out.
If Barnes opts out, then the Mavericks can sign Vucevic.
Yeah.
Because Barnes is at 25, Vucevic would get about 25.
Yeah.
But my point is, you might, what if you can trade for him before, and Barnes would be the centerpiece of that trade?
And that almost might be better because, like, again, Harrison Barnes has a player option. Mm-hmm. If he opts in, you're screwed.
Yeah. And
you can't get Vucevic.
Yes. But another thing to consider is next year's trade deadline. That $30 million that Barnes is going to be making next year is going to look really good.
But I mean, like, Vucevic is a free agent this summer, right? So in terms of getting him,
you're not going to get him. If Barnes opts in, you're done. Probably not going to get Vucevic.
Dwight Powell also has a player option. He's going to opt in because
no one's going to pay him.
I think
the Mavericks
after next
him.
Season, I don't think he's going to be in the league anymore. I don't think anybody wants him. I don't think anyone knows who he is.
No.
If it wasn't for the Mavs, I don't think he'd even be in the league.
Yeah, he's going to opt in. So that $10 million you're not getting. Yeah. It's Barnes that's the big one.
Yeah, because all the other guys coming off the books are making like $3 or $2 million.
Barnes is making $28 million next
25.
Year.
25.
Well, this year. But I think next year jumps up to
25. No, this year is at 24. Next year it'll be 25.
So it's 25 next year. But still, that's $25 million.
Yeah.
Now, again, if he opts in, it really sucks, but he's going to be traded.
It is what it is. Yeah,
like at the
but
next year's
Vucevic.
Trade deadline. Well, I do too. And that's where I think Vucevic would have to kind of say, hey, I want to go in Dallas. I'm not re-signing with you. You know, we'll see. I want Vucevic as well. I don't, it just, it's Barnes. Our future is in Barnes' hands. And, you know, I don't know if he's even happy anymore. Luka just, all the guys that were here, Luka just kind of stole the Mavericks' hearts.
I mean, they had their chance. Well, they had their time.
I'm not saying Luka did anything wrong, but you know, you're a little, your feelings are hurt a little bit.
I guess so,
So you may want to go somewhere else and play somewhere else.
Well, good, opt out.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, that's what we want, but you know, it would be cool to get Vucevic this year before he even becomes a free agent. And then you got, and then this year you would make the playoffs probably.
Probably, yeah.
Because with Vucevic and Luka.
Yeah.
I mean, you're 3.5. You'd have to go on a great run, but it's not out of the question.
Yeah. Anyways, so I feel like we're just rambling at this point, but basically everything is awesome. Everything is awesome. So I think that's pretty much it. Thank you guys for listening. Remember, you can listen or download episodes on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, pretty much everywhere. Also download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm. But if you download the Anchor app on Apple or Google, you can send us a recorded message. So let us know what you think about these signings or what trades you think they should do. And it'd be cool to listen to those. Also follow the show on Twitter at Dallas Hoops Cast, not Dallas Hoops Fan Cast. Long story, I already explained it. At Dallas Hoops Cast on Twitter. Thanks guys for listening, and we'll talk to you guys in the next episode. Bye. You never say bye.
Okay, I'll say bye and you can edit out all this. See you guys.